Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Till 11 o'clock today, White Sox baseball coming your way at 12:30 with the pregame first pitch at 1:10. Just had a little visit from the Silverman clan here, Bri.
Yeah,
Sylvie brought in Mason and Braxton to the studio.
Looking sharp in their Sylvie Strong t-shirts, and Mark is going to be a speaker at the Cancer Survivor Walk in Grand Park this
today,
morning.
Yep.
And so it's great. I mean, obviously, it's great that he beat cancer and that he's still giving back and being a part of a wonderful event here in the great city of Chicago on a Sunday morning.
And Braxton told us when he walked into the studio, he wanted to see Waddle, and I said, we all do.
Yeah.
I said, let's give him a call and see if he'll come down on Sunday morning. But it was a short break, so we didn't have the chance to make the phone call to Waddle, but I'll text him and see if he'll meet us down here.
And I've got Sylvie's sons doing an afternoon drive in about 10 years, so...
I think you're pushing Sylvie out sooner than he wants.
He's not here. He can't hear.
I'm sure Waddle will gladly sign up for that. Yeah. It'll have to be Sylvie and Sons 2-6 here on ESPN 1000. All right, so we got word on Friday that the Bears had a meeting with the city of Naperville, Bri. This was an interesting development because for those who may have forgotten, back on March 28th at the NFL owners meeting, Bears team president Kevin Warner talked about how Arlington Heights was their sole focus.
I mean, now our focus remains, you know, in Arlington Park. It has to be. I mean, we purchased the land, and that's one of the things I'm looking forward to go to work, you know, on that. But that was a big step. I mean, it was. I think it's showed our commitment to doing the right thing, especially solving a stadium solution. So it was the same way during our press conference. They remained focused on to work things out with Arlington Park. Before
you got remember, so the big step, of course, being that the Bears purchased the Arlington Heights, the Arlington Park site for $197.2 million.
Yeah, and so Friday, the headline on the Sun-Times story and the Tribune obviously covered it, and it was obviously a surprising story. Naperville Bears, team exploring move to the western suburb, fearing potential Arlington Heights stadium is, quote-unquote, at risk. And you just heard the president of the club saying the sole focus is that basically he was saying we're not going back to Soldier Field, and there's no reason to keep having those conversations. New mayor or not, they're moving on. But this is, I mean, anyone's been covering stadium issues. Remember when Michael McCaskey, when he was running the Bears, and he invited the photographers from the newspapers to join him in Gary, checking out sites in Gary, Indiana. It's when things aren't going your way, or you don't believe they're moving in the right direction, or nearly as quickly as you'd hope they would in terms of getting financial assistance from the state, the city, whichever government entity you're trying to woo, you start. Tom Ricketts played footsie with Rosemont, right? They were going to build a replica of Wrigley Field out there. And you know, Rosemont obviously has an arena out there, and it's been doing well forever. So it won't be for lack of suitors. But are you really – does anyone believe that they're going to Naperville or and opening the door to any other suburb or Gary, Indiana, or whomever at this point, given what they've already – done with purchasing the land and beginning to tear down Arlington racetrack?
And so the reason you know that this is absolutely a leverage play is the Bears commented on the meeting between Kevin Warren and Naperville Mayor Scott Worley. The Bears communication had this statement, quote, "We will continue the ongoing demolition activity and work toward a path forward in Arlington Heights, but it is no longer our singular focus. It is our responsibility to listen to other municipalities in Chicagoland about potential locations that can deliver on this transformational opportunity for our fans, our club, and the state of Illinois." So they commented on this public meeting, and I agree with you. It's absolutely the Bears not liking what they're hearing from Arlington Heights and trying to apply some pressure and show, and now this is, how credible is it, right? That's the real question. They're trying to show that there are other cities, other towns that might be more than willing to give the Bears what they're what they want.
Which is, quote-unquote, property tax certainty is necessary for the Arlington Park project to move forward. And that means we want to pay as little in property taxes as possible. And not only that, they want to freeze their property tax rate, which they hope to be a very favorable rate. I mean, anyone who owns a home in the city or the suburbs or in the state of Illinois would love property tax certainty. You know what the certainty of property taxes in Illinois is? It's going up every year.
Uh-huh.
Because we have a pension problem that the math doesn't work, and so it's coming out that we generate money through property taxes.
Yes.
So the only certainty is that you and me and the small business guy are going to pay more taxes each and every year. It's just a matter of how much.
Yes.
And all these studies and research that teams usually do and, you know, companies do for them and get a nice check to tell you how much revenue the said stadium is going to generate for the ensuing, you know, the surrounding communities.
All the jobs they'll generate. By building,
I mean, it's so overinflated. It never comes to fruition, and it's not just sports. I mean, whether Illinois gives then Sears a huge subsidy or brings Boeing in or whatever, they always tell you how much the hundreds of millions of dollars they're showering with said company or said team is going to come back in 2-3 times in return, and it never happens. It's the selling the renovation of Soldier Field with The hotel tax is going to pay for it. So you as a property tax owner or property owner won't pay any taxes. It's tourists, people visiting the city. That they're going to pay the 12, 15, 18% tax on the rooms.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it. We got this covered.
We know you live here. You never need a hotel in downtown Chicago, even if you live in the state of Illinois.
If it's 95% tourists, which is probably true, that money could go to other things in the city. It doesn't have to go to Soldier Field. And by the way, all these years later, all these decades later, there is still $650 million, give or take, owed on the renovations from Soldier Field on those bonds because the bonds, the interest rates have gone up. So now they can't cover that with the hotel tax, which, by the way, during the pandemic, nobody in the hotels, therefore no hotel taxes. So all the projections they tell you never come to fruition, and now the Bears, it's not their debt, and they're balking at the one of the local state representatives said, okay, my bill will get the some money to the Chicago Bears. They like that part of it in property tax certainty.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to put a $3 surcharge on every ticket sold for Bears games to help pay off the debt at Soldier Field. And the Bears are like, why would we want our tickets to go up $3 when it's not our debt? It's the Park District and City's debt.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, people don't see the difference there, but it technically it's true. It's not their debt. They're going to have to pay a penalty to walk away from Soldier Field if the stadium in Arlington or Naperville is ready before their lease is up at Soldier Field. But have you ever tried to get to Naperville?
Oh.
It's a lovely community. It, again, voted this year, I think, one of the top places to live in the country. But there's a Metro stop on the property at Arlington Park. On the property. So you have some public transportation. It's near a major intersection of interchange of expressways and tollways. So I know that infrastructure has to be expanded and improved to get 70,000 or more people in every Bears home game. But Naperville, they're not going to Naperville. So call their bluff. Let them go through the public relations stuff. And they wanted the story to get out.
Oh, absolutely. And they're already committed to their $200 million in to their Arlington Heights project. So what would Naperville have to do to make it lucrative enough for the Bears to take that hit, right? You may be able to save me $300 million in whatever projections you want to create if you're Naperville. But if I'm the Bears, I also have to look at balance it out and say, okay, well, what you're promising me, is that enough to offset what I think I could be making in Arlington Heights? And again, I'm already committed now to buying this. Brian, you tell me what organization outside of an NFL team would be interested in that land if the Bears decided, okay, we want to go to Naperville, let's sell this off. They're going to take a loss if they end up having to sell that property because they're the entity that it appealed to
gonna,
most.
They're going
to
anchor a residential area. You know, they have an entertainment district planned and everything else. But it's all about the Bears being there, the Bears offices.
Yes.
I thought about this the other day, Friday, when the story broke. How close is Halas Hall to Arlington Park versus how close is Halas Hall to Naperville? I mean, it's a little thing, but it's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, it just, there's a reason that Arlington Park makes so much sense to them. Look, Tom Ricketts wanted money from the state and the city when he was renovating Wrigleyville and buying up everything around Wrigley Field to generate more money for his family and the Chicago Cubs. And Crane Kenny is his MVP because of the money he generates as a business guy. And I know it was politics, but Rahm Emanuel, because they were so diametrically opposed politically, you know, Joe Ricketts, ultra-conservative, yep. Rahm Emanuel, Democrat, they weren't playing ball, cliche as that is. He said, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And by the way, the city can't afford it.
Sure.
The Jerry Reinsdorf and then Bill Wirtz and the Wirtz family built the United Center years ago, 1995, I want to say, basically it opened. And they did the entire stadium by themselves, private financing. Now, I do believe the state and the city helped with the surrounding infrastructure, with the streets and the, you know, utilities, mm-hmm. and they got a break that way. But the White Sox sweetheart lease from Jim Thompson all those years ago when he was governor, that just doesn't happen anymore. Most states and cities don't have the money.
Yes.
We're bleeding in the state. You can't. Whatever, you know, the Bears envision getting state subsidies or local subsidies or property tax freeze, we'd all love to have a sweetheart deal and get that, but no one can afford it these days. And why should they get it anyway? Because they're worth $6 billion, and once that stadium's up and running, they might be worth $9 or $10 billion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you're looking, once they executed the purchase agreement back in February, right, like, now you're talking Naperville would have to promise something. At least if I'm looking at it, I want something that's going to be a $500 million more, you know, in value than, because again, I'm $200 million in and I have to offload that property because chances are the Bears are not going to be keeping that on the books if they're not building up a stadium, right? I can't imagine they're all of a sudden.
They're looking for a property tax freeze maybe up to 40 years. Freezing at a percentage as we sit here in 2023. Well, of course they would love that, but
who wouldn't? I'd love you to freeze my property taxes for the next 40 years.
And how much money is that actually going to be for a stadium that's going to cost $2.5 billion?
Yeah, like that's the thing. Think about how, you know, that is going to be one of the, at least especially for Arlington Heights, one of the most profitable revenue generators they will have as a community. So they don't want to freeze
and
that.
And the property tax goes into the surrounding education system, the public school system out there. And that's who's going to get hurt the most if they freeze a tax for 40 years. Then there's going to be less money to put into the public school system out there.
So this is the Bears' play, right? Like, they don't like what they hear from Arlington Heights, so they're using Naperville as leverage. And, of course, the new mayor in Naperville, Scott Worley, who until Friday, I didn't know his name because I am not a resident of Naperville,
sure.
Brian, because he has just come into office here. You know, this is perfect for him because he gets his name out into the public domain and all of a sudden people are aware of who the Naperville mayor is, even though ultimately he doesn't have to. This is just, hey, I'm courting the Bears. I'm going to see what I can do. There's really no downside for him.
If you live in Naperville, again, voted one of the best places to live in a year in, year out for, you know, a better part of 10 years or so in the country, do you really want a stadium being built in your community of 130,000 and all the traffic that goes with it? I mean, the mayor may want that because, you know, he'll be sitting there in a suite watching the games every Bears home game. But I can't imagine there are a lot of people in Naperville that would want to be giving up tax revenue. And it's the old not my backyard, right? I'd want to go to a Bears game, but I'd rather have it built in your backyard, my backyard.
And even though Naperville Mayor Scott Worley's letter to Kevin Warren touted Naperville being accessible through major highways such as the East-West Interstate 88 and the North-South Interstate 355, as well as the downtown Metro Station, although some of these sites really aren't close to the metro station,
no.
So you have to set up some type of commuter system to get to these stadium sites.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you're getting on a bus. Once you take the train, you're getting on a bus to go to the stadium and then reverse it going home.
So you can, you know, tout all the possibilities of this site or future sites to be built up, but when you start looking at it practically, okay, a lot of work needs to be done where before you can even start to compare what the Bears are currently in Arlington Heights versus what could be in Naperville. So see it for what it is, just, you know, the Bears using what leverage they have, but you have to ask the question, what leverage is it really when you've kind of committed yourself to Arlington Heights? So 312-332-3776 if you want to chat about that. Also want to go on the field a little bit, or at least an off-season training activity and some of the absences that were notable from this week. We'll do that right here on ESPN 1000, Meller and Hanley, till 11 o'clock.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Here on ESPN 1000, lots to do here before we get out of here at 11 o'clock. Want to talk a little bit of Bears, sneak in some Shohei talk. He was in the city. Jed Hoyer weighed in on that. We've got some Bulls we'd like to get after, so plenty to do here. Let's waste no more time. So Jalen Johnson was not at OTAs this past week yet again. He did join Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max earlier this week. He was asked how he's feeling heading into his contract year. Remember, his rookie deal will be up at the end of this season.
Honestly, for me, it used to be a lot of pressure. I would even say for me going into my third year, I felt like that was a year for me to put myself out there, to be able to have a new contract, to be able to re-up. I think for me, it's just about going out and being who I am. And for me, I know I can be a dominant corner. I am a dominant corner in this league, following number one wide receivers, and just finding ways to continue to do my job at a higher rate, continue to be a better teammate, continue to find ways to win. And I think at the end of the day, that's all I want to do. I haven't been having a winning season since I've been on the Chicago Bears yet. So, I mean, for me, I want to come in. I want to be a dominant guy in the league. I'm going to dominate on this defense, and I want to come in and win games and change that narrative. And like you said earlier, I mean, winning comes paychecks. And I think at the end of the day, I need to focus on winning, and that's what I'm worried about going into year four.
So that was Jalen Johnson, who was not in attendance at Bears OTAs this past week.
Yeah, and look, he didn't sound like Roquan Smith. He didn't write a letter and calling out people and saying the owner's got to get involved and charging the team with bad faith negotiations. He said, if you take him at his word, with winning, the money will come and I'll be good. Fact of the matter is, though, is one of your best players on the team, you would hope that he would be there, even though they're OTAs, they're optional.
And I'll point out, though, Roquan Smith did attend the OTAs last season. His issues didn't come until training camp, and they actually wanted him to get out onto the field, and he was going to be fined. And remember, they create, like, it was a situation where I had never actually seen it before, where he was there, but he was not taking.
He didn't want to get hurt
in any activities. Yeah.
Jalen, apparently, according to Matt Eberflus, is on Zoom meetings with the defense and his unit. He's watching film on his own. But as he said, it's invaluable to be actually in the facility, whether they're OTAs or not. You know, the idea that everyone should be in this together and everyone should be present when possible. He sounds sincere when he doesn't sound like it's a money issue, but ultimately you follow the money. Right?
The one thing I'll say is this is similar, though, to what the Bears are doing with Naperville. They're trying to make a leverage play, but I look at it, and unfortunately for Jalen Johnson, there's not a whole lot of leverage for him to use,
no.
Right? This is, okay, fine, I'm not going to show up to these voluntary OTAs, but you're under contract for next year, and if you don't show up to training camp, they're going to hit you with fines that are going to be extremely punitive. And oh, by the way, the Bears do have the option to franchise tag him next season. It's projected to be roughly a little bit over $20 million per season for a cornerback if they use the franchise tag on him next season. So my question, too, is like he calls himself a dominant cornerback who follows around the number one wide receivers. Look, you can follow the number one wide receiver all you want. If A.J. Brown's still cracking 100 yards when you're the one following him, I don't know.
Not only that, who's your second choice to follow the number
exactly.
one? Exactly. So, you
need to be, as you're saying, a dominant corner.
Right. I mean, you can't argue on this team he is the guy, but that doesn't mean when you look...
Is he worth $20 million
and if they,
per season?
I don't think they're going to tag him at $20 million, but I know players get upset because it's not security. It's a one-year paycheck, and it looks great, but you can get hurt, and then there's no other paychecks coming after that. But you can make ends meet on $20 million.
Sure. Yeah. And again, though, and I don't know if Ryan Poles evaluates Jalen Johnson as somebody he wants to spend $20 million a season on, but that's probably where the disconnect might be right now. Yep. Is how you value yourself versus how the organization values him. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward how this plays out. We'll see if he is in attendance at the Bears' next OTA, which he said he would be.
Yep.
So we'll see how that plays out and if we can actually, as you said, take him at his word going forward here. 312-332-3776. Bear fan Bob wanted to chime in on the Bears' Naperville idea. What's going on, Bobby?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, Robert.
So, did anybody ever consider that this should have been thought about before they made the purchase of Harlington? And, oh, by the way, since I'm a season ticket holder, do I get to negotiate my terms for my season tickets because the teams have been so bad for all these years? Just saying and just thinking. You know, I mean, if they get to renegotiate a deal, why can't I? Fair enough, don't you think?
It's an astute point, Bob, about the idea of, hey, did they do the enough research beforehand? It's a fair question, that, right?
And you're up there.
Right.
You're up there behind the cheddar curtain. And I was saying to Jeff during the break, it's Rob Manfred showing up in Milwaukee and saying, well, you better come up, the state better come up with $450 million to renovate the Brewer Stadium, which isn't all that old, and everyone believes it's a pretty nice stadium. And it sounds like the state's going to go ahead and try to do whatever they can and get to close to that number. But you have the commissioner come in. It's the old playbook. Oh, it's not us. It's Major League Baseball demanding we upgrade the facilities. So he comes in and plays the bad guy and catches all the slings and arrows. But I don't have the Bears explained what the PSL policy, like if you own PSLs at Soldier Field.
Oh, I'll tell you what the policy is. It's your SOL.
Yeah.
PSL, SOL.
Yeah. Because it's going to go up. For sure, right? I mean, you would think that's a contract that you
it's
bought into.
It's a completely different facility. You know what they'll be doing, Bob? I'm sure you'll probably agree with me, Bob. The Bears will be creating new PSLs in the Arlington Heights project, assuming where they end up building.
Of course, and what really kind of throws me a curve is like the Bears had a God-given gift of a lifetime with Arlington Heights. And you couldn't ask for a better place and a better deal to get out of Chicago. I mean, with all the mess down there, what a terrific place. And now we're pulling this because we can't afford $95 million. Let's face it, that's a salary of one player. Are you kidding me? Pay your bill, shut up, build the place, and get it over with.
Well, sorry, Bob, I clipped you there. Let's hope that Arlington Heights doesn't cave, right? That's the truth of the matter, because I don't think the Bears really want to go anywhere else.
I don't think they're going anywhere else. They're just going to extract whatever they can extract. And if they get something, they'll be happy. But if they get everything, they'll be much happier.
Interesting. Interesting times for the Bears. And we are the brand new home of the Chicago Bears. So we will be obviously watching very closely how this unfolds.
I just banged my finger on the counter here.
And you have yourself a finger issue that you're dealing with.
Anyone who's grown up in Chicago, and I have a little splint on my, if you're watching Twitch,
if you're watching Twitch, Brian is giving you the middle finger.
Yeah, it's my road rage finger. I'm not that guy. But, you know, anyone grows up in Chicago and plays 16-inch softball, you have a couple mangled fingers to show for it, right?
Certainly.
And you just, you know.
It's a rite of passage
in
Chicago.
Yeah, right. I mean, you try to, hopefully you have, most of them are okay, but you have one or two. So someone asked me whenever they see the splint on there with the tape, you know, like, what'd you do to your finger? I got to come up with a better story because I actually snapped my finger making a bed and heard it snap.
Making the bed.
Making the bed.
When you initially said that, I didn't even register because I thought you said making a bet.
No.
You said making a bed with a D, and my mind just said, that doesn't make sense. He must have said making a bet. Like,
yeah, and you could make a bet that you could go through your life without injuring your finger making a bed.
I thought the folks at the Mirage were taking you in back because you were caught card counting. Or
I got a guy, and I'm a little behind on the payment, so they just went for one finger.
The classic scene in Casino.
Yeah. But so I'm like, I'm the only dope in the world who ever snapped a finger, and it's not broken, it's sprained. It didn't even hurt, but the tip of the finger just was dangling down. After I heard an audible snap, I'm like, ooh, that can't be good. And I could lift the tip of my finger by using another finger.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, So I call my doctor, and I'm at a place waiting to get an x-ray, and he calls back, and he said, "You're not going to believe this. I did the exact same thing." I'm like, "Making a bet?" He goes, "Yeah." I'm like, "Okay, there's two of us who are dopes." But I got to come up with a better story than that, because someone asked me the other day, "What happened to your finger?" And I'm like, "Okay, softball injury? Do I just go to default so I don't sound like..."
I think we stumbled into it. I think you say you were caught making a bet, and you were illegally card counting, and they wanted to send a message.
It made me think of what are the kind of the weirdest, strangest injuries you've ever sustained that weren't sports related, and you're embarrassed to even have to explain it to people.
I
saw a thing on Twitter yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's a piece of plastic. It's like a big shoehorn.
Yeah.
To make the bed.
Uh-oh. I think you got to buy one.
I almost bought it just because.
Yes.
Yesterday. I mean, it's a piece of plastic. You probably find something around the house that would be just as good. And here's a person making the king-size bed with the fitted sheets and just working around so their fingers don't snap.
Not snapping tendons in the middle finger. I have a dumb injury that I will share with you next. And also, we do want to talk a little bit about, we got some Bulls options, what should they be doing in the future here, and maybe if we have time, we'll get into a little bit of Shohei Ohtani's free agency. Jed Hoyer had a thought on that with Waddle and Sylvie. We'll share that too. Lots to do here in the next half hour before we get out of here. White Sox baseball pregame coverage coming your way at 12:30. I'm Jeff Mellor. He's Ryan Hanley, ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Yeah, well. I'm too sexy for this girl, too sexy for your girl.
Mellor and Hanley until 11 o'clock. All right, before we get into a little bit of Shohei Ohtani talk, Jed Hoyer discussing just what he's doing in baseball these days, and we saw it firsthand here in our city as he homered three times against the White Sox earlier in the week here. I will share with you my dumb injury, Brian. My buddy, it was his bachelor party weekend. We started things off with a tailgate at Guaranteed Rate Field. And what we were cooking up some carne asada on the grill.
Sounds good.
And we were, you know, the flank steak and throwing it on the grill. And I was manning the grill.
Ooh.
And I was, you know, carne asada, adding a little bit of flavor. It was marinated meat. But as I was grilling and turning the meat, I was adding some lime and squeezing it over the flank steak. And no, never thought I even had a few beers throughout the tailgate party before we went into the stadium to watch the White Sox. Don't even remember who they were playing that day because, again, it was a bachelor party festivity. So obviously lots was forgotten throughout the day. But so we ate lots of street tacos and carne asada throughout our tailgate.
That's a great tailgate, by the way.
It was good. Listen, it was like I said, it was his bachelor party weekend, so we did it up a little bit. And meat was great. Everything loved it. Had a great time at the game. Again, can't tell you who won. Don't know what happened in the game, but it was a good time. But what I do remember was throughout the game, it was very hot. It was like, you know, one of those hot as midsummer days. It was probably a June or July. Can't tell you when, but it was a hot day.
Humid? Just
hot, sweaty, humid, probably well into the 90s. And we were out in the bleachers having a great game, having a great day. And the reason it's a dumb injury was because that was on a Saturday. On Sunday, after all the festivities, whatever proceeded into the night, woke up probably, it was probably, you know, I was in my mid-20s, so it was probably Sunday afternoon when I woke up. Woke up, and I was like, boy, that was a rough night. Feeling not great, dehydrated, and, you know, my left hand was really sore. I was like, why is my hand so sore? It progressively got more and more sore throughout the day. And then I woke up Monday morning. I remember having to take ibuprofen to go to bed because my hand was just very, very sore, and I didn't quite know why. So I woke up Monday morning, and actually Waddle and Sylvie had a live broadcast in Wrigley Field. And I was out on site with them. And all of a sudden, and this was back when they were on in the, you know, the 10 to noon slot.
Right.
And as the, you were actually probably out at another bar. Doing a live event.
It wasn't 10 to noon.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. We might have been 9 to noon. Anyway. So I was, all of a sudden, this my hand, I'm like, God, it's really starting to get sore. And then I start to look down, and throughout the show, I start to see my hand bubble up.
Ooh.
And like get like a giant, almost like blister. And by the end of the show, it was like my entire hand was, it looked like it had been put in a balloon, like you know, like a, just a hermetically sealed balloon or something, where it was like just starting to expand. I had to go to the emergency room, and the doctor was like, "What's going on here?" I was like, "I have no idea." Well, didn't quite understand what was going on. We come to the realization, actually had left the emergency room. I don't even remember specifically, because this is years ago, but I don't even remember what exactly happened. But finally came to the hypothesis that what had probably had happened was when I was cooking up the carne asada with the lime juice, I had basically put a bunch of acid. Ooh. On my left hand, squeezing the lime, cooking up the carne asada, had sat in the sun all day. And it basically cooked my... No, I basically cooked my hand.
Oh, my.
But it wasn't like an immediate response. And that's why it was all sore on Sunday. And then eventually, like, it was like a burn. I had burned my hand from cooking up carne asada. But it took almost 48 hours for my hand to finally, like, fully expand. And it was just an insanely dumb injury.
Two questions. How did they treat that? And have you ever had carne asada tacos since?
I have never tailgated with them. I'll tell you that. Yeah. And honestly, I don't remember if it was a cream or they completely wrapped it up.
Oh.
And I just don't even remember the specifics of it. But all we came to the conclusion was, you have a burn. And we didn't know why.
From citrus, from lime.
Yes. And like eventually, I actually left the emergency room. And then finally, like after like trying to recount my steps, like figured out that's what I did. I had squeezed the lime. And not just squeezed, but because we were in the parking lot of Guaranteed Rate Field, I actually hadn't had a chance to like rinse off my hands, right? And then, but I probably wiped my hands off with a napkin and then went into the bleachers
and
basically just sat in the sun and cooked my hand for hours.
Would you serve that at internal temperature of 165? What
it
do you
was,
do with it?
Yeah, that's certainly my dumbest injury. And that one I think trumps your bed making.
Yeah, I mean, but you're doing it. Yeah, I mean, that you know, you're going upscale on the tailgate and everything. You didn't just throw ballpark Franks on the grill and call it a day. And wow, that is bizarre.
Yes, it absolutely, yeah. And like I said, I had stumped the doctor. And then, like I said, that was the only thing we could actually come to a conclusion on that probably made sense.
Yeah, I'd stay away from, do you grill on regular now?
I do. I just wash my hands now.
Okay. But,
like immediately, yeah. And I don't go bake myself in the sun anymore. That's what I try and do. All right, so Shohei Ohtani put on a show at Guaranteed Rate Field. And honestly, we were talking about, we look up at the Sports Center, and again, he did something last night. Did he homer again last night? Did he one hit shy of the cycle? I don't know. They're showing you all of these things and they all start to blend together of what he's actually doing. Every time he goes out and does something on the baseball field, it seems like it's the first time since Babe Ruth, or even it's the first time it's ever been done in baseball history. So Jed Hoyer, who we've played a little bit of sound from him.
He didn't knock out a home plate umpire with a fastball, did he?
That's true. He has not done that. Yeah. That happened yesterday in the White Sox game, which was also a first.
Yeah. Mr. Cisnero has that accomplishment now.
It was not Shohei Ohtani who did it. So Waddle tried to get Jed Hoyer to comment on Ohtani as a free agent next season. I think he painted it as, what if this hypothetical generational talent is available next season? How interested would you be? And Jed, of course, couldn't really comment on it, but he couldn't help but rave about Shohei Ohtani.
I will say, it's there's nothing like it. You know, like we've never seen this in our lifetime. Certainly, I mean, people talk about a generational talent, but it's actually far more than that. We haven't seen this since Babe Ruth, and what he's doing is really special. And yeah, I look forward. I'll be out there next week. I look forward to watching it in person. It's really it is something that I hope people cherish what he's doing, and I hope more people do it in the future. Like, there'd be nothing better than this spawning something new, right? Like, I don't see any reason why other people can't do maybe even a lesser version of this in the future. You know, close in DH or do something else. But like, I hope he changes our sport in that way. It'd be wonderful if guys could do both. You know, we were talking about this in the not too distant, you know, past about just like, you know, when I was a kid, you had Brian Jordan and Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson, and you know, he's sort of doing the baseball version of that. It'd be great if more athletes could be able to do that again.
Now, will they go ahead, Brian?
Do you think Jed was out in the bleachers after having carne asada tacos and taking in? I mean, I don't think he would show up at the press box as a scout or sit in the seats as a scout in scouting Shohei Ohtani. I'm sure the Cubs had somebody there.
Well, we know Theo's been known to make his way into the bleachers
with
the every now and then.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah, I just wonder if Jed was sitting there, you know, with his sunglasses and mustache and beard.
Sneaking to the rate.
Yeah, trying to take notes on Shohei, but he's going to see him on the West Coast. That's great. But, hey, just get your checkbook ready. And even then, you ask the question, even then, you would think any player of that caliber would love to come and be, you know, like Marcus Stroman sings the praises of being in, mm-hmm. you know, in front of 35,000, even when the Cubs stink, you know, showing up and playing at Wrigley Field. But Shohei said the money is going to be the money, and that's certainly a huge part of it. But I want to know that we're going to win, and you're going to have to be either a winning team or prepared to win. And when he becomes a free agent, are the Cubs anywhere close to being a team that can to win it all, not just win a division?
Yeah, they might get the easiest out because it sounds like everything you read that Shohei kind of, he likes being on the West Coast. Yeah. And so everything points to the Los Angeles Dodgers being the real team that'll be in competition with the Angels because, of course, they share the city. And if not them, maybe San Diego, maybe the Padres can break the bank for him because they seem to have an unlimited amount of resources to spend on players. So the Cubs might be given an easy out in that they're not on the West Coast and so they don't have any chance. But you're right. Like, no matter what, the starting point is going to be a $500 million contract yeah. mm-hmm. for Shohei Ohtani. Does it get to $600 million? I don't know. But ultimately, will that really move him? No, I think he's spent enough time languishing with the Angels where he probably is going to be like, it's all about showing me that we can win. And you saw it in the World Baseball Classic. Just give him an opportunity to shine on the biggest stage.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Major League Baseball, and we know Shohei loves the West Coast and all that. Major League Baseball would love to see him, if not Wrigley Field or the South Side, but we know the White Sox don't do $100 million contracts, let alone $600 million. You know, get the star of stars on the East Coast so he's on prime time. So that 70, you just said, what did he do last night? Did he hit a home run? Did he strike? It's West Coast baseball and night games.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And Major League Baseball would love to have him actually in front of eyes in TV cameras and national TV cameras. And where the world is watching in real time or knows instead of sleeping while he's out doing what he does.
No, it's a great point. Yeah, what did I do? I went to sleep last night.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani had 4 hits.
Yeah.
He had an RBI triple in the third, an RBI double as part of the 4-run seventh. He also scored on a wild pitch in the ninth. That seemed to be the theme of yesterday's baseball game.
Wild pitch.
Wild pitches, everybody scoring runs. 312-332-3776. All right, we have to talk a little bit about the Bulls. Brian wants to hit on something Joe Cowley brought up, and you'll never guess who weighed in on an Athletic column regarding what the Cincinnati Reds will be doing. He got very perturbed. He's the biggest voice in college football. That's right, college football, not baseball. We'll tackle those two things coming up next.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Dippity. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that. I think you can get with this, because this is kind of fat.
Can anybody fix the Bulls? Or are they just in a spot where it is unfixable right now, Brian?
Well, this is my buddy Joe Colley's answer, the lead to his column in the Sun-Times. The Bulls are in NBA hell, period, paragraph. And next graph, the rest of the league knows it, and if Executive Vice President of Basketball Operations Arturis Karnisovas is honest with himself, he knows it as well. It's not a good place to be.
No.
And they've been banging the drum on continuity and apparently have doubled down, if not apparently tripling down on continuity, because Lonzo Ball is going to come back sometime in my lifetime and actually start playing guard for the Bulls again, which
will I'm sure if he comes back, it'll be at the same level he was at before he got hurt.
There are a lot of people speculating he's not coming back at all. And if so, his contract will be up with the Bulls and he won't be interested in coming back to the Bulls anyway. Project Blow Up, according to Joe, is not an option, according to AK. And again, he's the continuity guy. That's the executive, thinks he has something that has legs here. But I'm with Joe, and Joe throws out a couple possible trade scenarios. You have to do something this offseason to not only reinvigorate the fan base and reinvigorate the team, but actually set a different course. And that likely means moving Zach LaVine and or DeMar DeRozan. And as Joe points out, Portland, there's been some buzz out of Portland that the Bulls and the Trailblazers could come up with a deal, but it all depends on what they're going to do with Damian Lillard. And if they're going to build around him and try to win something, then maybe the Bulls and Trailblazers could actually make a deal with DeRozan or LaVine being the centerpiece of it. And you could get a prospect or the rights to guard Scoot Henderson, so you solve your Lonzo Ball problem moving forward. But he also mentions Orlando as a landing spot or trade partner, and we know that they obviously AK got Vucevic, Vuce from
good working relationship with the Magic,
right.
And the Magic would be happy to probably reengage in talks because it worked out well for them.
And Joe points out that they have a young team, but they don't have a veteran presence. And not only does DeMar DeRozan in particular have life left in his NBA legs, and he can put up triple doubles and double doubles, but he would actually show those young guys what it takes to win, and we've seen that here. He tries to bring P. Will along, and not nearly as fast for my taste. But he's trying. He's trying to be the mentor and work with the young guy in the offseason, all that. But it will remain to be seen if there's a big package deal. But so far, I mean, we're beating up the Jet Hoyer. We're really beating up Rick and Kenny, whether it's a poll or in calls we take here. And AK and I guess Mark Eversley by extension. I mean, where's the outcry to we're sticking with our plan? What is your plan, and what has that really got you? A play-in game against Toronto and a quick exit against Miami? And being embarrassed last year by the Bucks because the Bucks are the Bucks and you're the Bulls. There has to be something that you can do, not just working around the edges. You have to come up with something substantial to let Bulls fans know that you're serious about trying to become relevant again in the Eastern Conference at the least.
I agree with you completely, Bri. But I'm also, I look at this and I try and be a realist about it, and I look at it from AK's perspective too, right? To have a conversation sometimes, we have to agree on certain things. Otherwise, there's always going to be a disconnect. And if the people in the, like, do the people in the Bulls front office truly believe that Lonzo Ball could return? Or are they just clinging to a hope and a prayer because they have no other
alternative? If it's a hope and a prayer, shame on them. And we were told last summer about this time, or maybe a month into July, that they wouldn't answer whether he'd be available for camp, training camp, but he was going to be ready for the start of the season. And we didn't see a minute of Lonzo Ball. So I don't know, when it comes to Lonzo Ball, if it's a hope and a prayer, just no credibility and,
But you know what I'm saying? Like we need to come to an agreement. Like, do they view it like we do? Whereas, listen, that's a sunk cost, and if he ever comes back, that'd be great. But
that'd
the reality
great, but
is,
don't count on
that's
it.
Far from
whatever that
likely.
Looks like. That can't be your plan moving forward. That he's going to come back at some point this season, 23-24, and we'll be good to go whenever that is. And Joe suggests that if you packaged put together both DeRozan and maybe Zach, you could really expand a deal with the Magic. And I don't know.
Maybe you could get your pick back.
That's exactly what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Get your pick back and then go ahead and find yourself. And you would get a guard in Suggs, as he points out, who would cover up defensive flaws if LaVine's still staying here. And you would get some talent in coming back the Chicago way, the Bulls way. And they would get a guy in DeRozan in particular who could lead them to maybe not the promised land, but lead a young, talented group of guys into more consistently winning and showing them what it takes to win in the NBA.
Listen, I'd be all in favor of that. Unfortunately, as we heard AK at the end of the season presser, right, that they snuck in on a Saturday afternoon when we were all worried about was it the draft? I'm trying to remember exactly what was going on that caught our attention.
I think it was the NFL draft.
It seems like their plan is to do everything they can to get Vooch back to sign a long-term deal, because they're pot committed to that trade that they made with the Orlando Magic, and they're so worried about losing an asset for nothing in that right. scenario that they are going to do move hell or high water just to try and bring him back.
And the supposedly the reports were this week that their two sides are talking. Well, okay, I would hope so. Because, as you point out, I mean, Vooch, they didn't trade him when his stock was the highest at the trade deadline, mm-hmm. and he would be a rental, obviously. But now he wants to know what the plan moving forward is, because he wants to get paid, but also, how is this going to get better? Just like, you know.
Is it?
And getting, it's, it, well, Vooch, just hang on, Lonzo's coming back. I mean, if that's the sales pitch, whether you like Vooch or not, he was playing his best basketball towards the second half of the season. And you did give up a pick that you would try to get back from Orlando, as you said. But the fact of the matter is, Vooch wants to get paid, and apparently he has an idea that he'd like to win, the best of both worlds.
So the NBA draft is Thursday, June 22nd. That obviously will be a big night in helping us determine what exactly the Bulls' plans are, or if it'll be, hey, let's sidle up with Vooch and, try and cross our fingers and hope Lonzo Ball comes back. Because if they want to make any significant moves, it's probably got to be for a draft pick. One thing I did want to share with folks, Bri, which amused me this past week, Kirk Herbstreit, Mr. Ohio, as you pointed out to me in the pre-show, he got very upset about some reporting done by The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal and C. Trent Rosenkranz. They do a great job, obviously, covering baseball. They're covering everything on The Athletic. They wrote an extensive piece about Ellie De La Cruz, who is the top hitting prospect in baseball, shortstop, possibly coming up for the Reds because he's basically proven everything that he can. They have a glut of good young infielders, Matt McClain, De La Cruz, but also Jonathan India, who is essentially one of the team leader. Well, Kirk responded to Ken Rosenthal's tweet. He tweeted this: "This team hasn't had a leader that pushed his teammates every day since Scott Rolen left in 2012. And we finally have that guy. And you write this article? India's value goes far beyond the numbers. As excited as we all are about the young talent coming up, India needs to be the rock and catalyst for years to come. Put De La Cruz in the outfield and move on." And one final, he got even more upset at C. Trent Rosenkranz. And to be honest, he dropped a BS in the middle of his tweet on C. Trent Rosenkranz. Bri, I haven't seen Kirk Herbstreit this upset about something happening in college football or the NFL. I don't think ever. He's more mad about his Reds and reporting about Jonathan India.
And he told Ken Rosenthal to lose the bow tie, too. It's not working for me. God bless him. The Reds have a nice problem to have, the glut and all, but they're still the Reds, and they got to figure out how to get all that talent on the field on a regular basis.
Thanks, Bri. Thanks to Kendra Smith today. White Sox baseball coming your way. Pregame coverage at 12:30. I'm Jeff Meller. He's Brian Hanley. This is ESPN 1000.